Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. We are so excited for you to be here
Hey,
today.
hun,
Yes? What?
what about the intro music?
I forgot about that. Here comes the music. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this very special episode today. Today, we are going to be going a little bit different. Now, have you ever thought to yourself, and I'm speaking to Kat right now, have you ever thought to yourself how wonderful it would be to actually get a chance to speak to, one of these very big directors,
Amazing directors,
amazing
like your
directors?
favorite director.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine sitting down with the very first chance you ever got to sit down and speak to someone like George Lucas, at one when he first starts out? You're the very first person that gets a chance to sit there and talk to him and say, listen, where did it all start? How did it all come about? How did
Well,
you?
even better, George Lucas went to film school. How would it have been to have sat down with George Lucas when he was in film school making THX? Whatever it was, that movie that he made at
Oh,
film school
yes.
that started him off and got him noticed.
That's right. I remember that one that started him off, and he was just, and just at his infancy, or a Steven Spielberg, even like someone like Alfred Hitchcock, sit down with him when he first starts doing movies and go, how did what how did this all start? How did you tell me about it? And you are the only person that ever starts and has that exclusive interview before he becomes world famous. And then you suddenly go, ah, there you go. I've
Well,
got the
guess
very
what? Now is your chance.
Now is our chance. We are going to be speaking to an upcoming indie director on his very, very first movie that he has done. And I'm just so excited that he's taken some time out of his busy schedule to come and speak to our little old podcast. So this is
Yeah,
a
we
very,
are
very.
absolutely thrilled to have this young up-and-coming director who is going into his final year of film school and has been doing some amazing, incredible work at film school. And we enticed him with cookies to come over here and hang out with us.
Yes. Now, as far as enticing him with cookies, we had to send him the cookies.
Well, he is in another country,
Yeah,
but
I mean, we left it on a plate by the front door and they're still there.
you know what?
So he hasn't come over and grabbed them yet. So we actually had to, ship them express post over them. So he's
You
got
know,
the
I try
cookies
to
now.
make a cute little joke, and you see what he does to me.
So without further ado, we would like to introduce to everyone the upcoming indie director, Alexander Milner.
Everyone, my name is Alexander Milner. As fun as it was to be compared to George Lucas, I'm not there at the moment.
Not
Hopefully, at some.
yet being the operative word. Because we have faith in you. We know what an incredibly talented young man you are. And we are just so excited to have you on the podcast today. And why don't you start by telling us a little bit about you, about your experience, where are you in film school, and kind of, what's the plan?
Yeah, so me personally, I've been primarily a camera operator. That's where my interest started. I started out doing a lot of film work in high school. I found out I was decent at it, so I decided to go to college for it. And luckily now I've learned about all the amazing roles you can do in it. So currently I'm getting to work on my first project as a director, along with a writer. So I've written and directed my first, short film that we're starting up to film in October. And I've primarily focused on a lot of narrative filmmaking and kind of in the production side of things.
Excellent. Now, do you feel that starting out as a camera operator gave you insight as to what a director would be looking for and kind of helped that transition more into wanting to run the entire show?
Slightly. No matter what you do in set or out of set, to direct, what I found is as long as you kind of have a general understanding of what every person's role is, you'll have an easy time directing,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. And I think a lot of people don't understand that concept. James Noyan.
I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he is the guy that has done the three Birdemics. And if you want to see a movie, and oh, it's almost like a case study of things to not ever do in movie making,
yes,
please go and watch Birdemic.
If they ever have a course in what not to do when making film, they will use these three films as the prime example.
I mean, his lens flare is terrible. His screenwriting is terrible. Just the way that he positions cameras, the way that he gets people to actually interact with each other. He doesn't edit. It is just so... As I said, if you ever get a chance to, and I know Birdemic
actually
is on,
don't watch it because you'll never get that time of your life back and you'll regret it forever.
But it is, it should be, as Kat said, what never to do to make a movie.
Yeah.
James Noyan. Yeah.
what were we talking about before we went off on the Birdemic tangent?
I think we were talking about. I don't know what you were talking about.
Go ahead, Alexander.
Sorry. No. But yeah, back to having like knowledge of all the fields that are generally, you know, what you're going to be doing. I would say for instance, like lighting, you need to be able to know how to talk to every aspect of the crew. And lighting is different. If you talk to someone and you go, oh, you know, I really, I want to get rid of these shadows. And, you know, and they say to you, well, do you want silk? Do you want something harder or rougher, or do you want to move the light? And understanding the equipment and terminology is really important. That same thing goes for post-production. When you're finishing up things and you're talking to them and you're going, oh, well, when we color grade this, let's make sure that our file is in Rec 709 or something. And understanding that when you're saying these things, they go, oh, he knows what he's talking about. So they trust your process, your ideas a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I know there are directors out there who don't take the time to actually work in the different roles. And I've heard tell of people who are just impossible to work with because of it. So good for you for understanding that concept and taking the time and putting in the work to really understand what it is, because I think overall that's going to make you a far better filmmaker than it would have been otherwise.
So I've got a question that I want to ask. I'm going to take him back to like his elementary school days.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Now, you know, kids say that, you know, they want to be a fireman or a policeman or whatever. What made you go down this path? Was it like a movie that you saw and you thought to yourself, man, I could make a better movie than that? Or was it something that just, you know, you just got interested in? Or what was the process that actually led you down this path?
No. There was never a movie that I watched where I was like, oh, this is crazy. I want to see how it's made. I didn't care about movies that way for a long time. For me, it really started when I was doing camera work. And I was practicing, you know, in like my high school. And when I was learning how to make, you know, framing of my shot and make it look interesting, I started watching movies more for the camera. And I would see it and I would go, oh, that looks cool. I wonder how they did that. And that leads you down the rabbit hole of figuring out, you know, how they do things with certain lenses, how they do things with certain rigs. Maybe it's a dolly, maybe it's a jib. And then the same thing kind of continued to happen. And I would go back and watch older movies and enjoy them. But in the aspects of like, I'm going to take a shot at like Bentley at school. That school was very in a school of thought, theory based, and they, you know, they want you to know all of these directors and they want you to know all of the theory of what makes a shot good instead of practicing it. The school I go to in Fitchburg, it's more hands-on, and you'll find that a lot of the students who are here, they don't care too often about directors or screenwriters and the fact of like, this is the person I look up to. You can have different styles of movies that you care about, but no one's not going to be really snobby about it. And I find that's more helpful in some ways when you're not like trying so hard to copy what other people have done.
I actually have a background in theater and got my bachelor's degree in theater production. And that was one of the reasons why I chose the department that I did, is because it was very hands-on. And a lot of places, whether it's film or live theater, it tends to be the actors versus the production people, with the actors thinking they're a lot better than the production people because they're the ones that are in front and that the audience sees. And my department was very much the same way, where if you're a production person, you have to get out on the stage to understand what the actors go through, and the actors have to try all the different parts of the tech, whether it's costuming, lighting, set design, sound, directing. All you have to try all of that so that you understand what the other side has to deal with. Yeah. And it does make for a better experience and a better, more rounded, holistic education.
Yeah, because it's almost like, you know, everyone, you know, can get into a car and go for a drive, but they forget that it's just, you know, the steering wheel is a small part of the entire, you know, vehicle that actually makes you go, you know, and so it's always the behind the scenes that you never get a chance to see. So I think that certainly lends a lot to be understanding where Alexander's coming from. Is there any director that you actually lean towards, that you actually enjoy his movies? Style?
Yeah,
well, his yeah, style. Their style?
I mean, a modern director is definitely going to be like Christopher Nolan. It's it's generic in a lot of ways, but what I like about his work is how practical it is. I like how he puts a lot of his effects camera first. But not in the vein that CGI is a bad thing. I would use it if I had the tools to do so. I like practical things. Practical making. Any director who does practical stuff is someone I'm going to lean to. But he's always kind of been my favorite. I've explored his work the most.
So this movie that you're doing, tell us a little bit about it. What's the premise of the movie? What does it entail? What's the whole story behind it?
Yeah. So the film that we're working on is called Reselfish Few. It's a drama piece set around a young man and a young adult, and he's coming to terms with the fact that his best friend Devin is dying to cancer, and it's a rough time for everyone who's involved. And Devin, while he is the main center of the story, he actually kind of takes a back seat, and this story focuses on the friend James and the rest of the family and how it's affecting them. And what we figured out when we were writing this film is that not a lot of shows or even movies put emphasis on how it affects other people, how it affects the rest of the family, and there's a lot of stress there. So we watch as James, you know, they're about a couple months into this whole procedure and process, and what ends up happening is a big fight breaks out, and each character starts to express their own wants and needs. And every person is at a different state of like acceptance or the reality of the situation. And as the title ensues, everyone has a selfish need that they want out of it. But as it progresses, that's really what it's all about. And, you know, trying to come to terms with it.
So why this story? How did you come to select this, to tell this particular story?
This story, I started writing. It was the first script I ever wrote. It started off called West Wing. If I didn't know, there was a show by that name already.
Oh, that's one of my favorite shows.
I was going to say.
I own the entire DVD set.
It was made as like my first pre-prod class. And it's a very different version than it was then. But it started there, and I left it alone for a really long time. And then I worked on some other projects while I was in school and then outside of it, and kept working on it. And then as I am now, I was getting closer to, you know, finding a team for our capstone. And everyone was like, oh, well, you know, we have these scripts. And I kept going back and forth to this old story and fixing it up and adding all the new skills that I had learned and how, you know, being a better writer. And so we picked this one, and I just kind of pushed it off a little bit more, made it better, filled it up. And the story itself, I'm a big fan of dramas. And I have personal experience with losing people to cancer. And so it's something I wanted to tell.
Excellent.
Is that your favorite genre to do is drama? I mean, is there anything that you want to branch into, or you'd predominantly like to just do drama?
Drama is fun. I like making them. The biggest reason I like making them is there.
Is there
You don't
what? Is
need
there
to
what?
make
Sorry.
you're cheap. You don't
Oh,
need a big
they're
budget to
cheap.
make a good
Yeah.
drama. Because I really want to make an action. I'd love to do that at some point. I want to. It's what got me into them, and the choreograph of fight scenes and things like that. But I do enjoy dramas. I like good dramas. When you make your characters rich and have, actual identities and wants, that's what drives them. If you watch something and it doesn't have a good character, it's not going to go anywhere. It has to be character based. Your character has to have
Absolutely.
nuance and desires, and that's what pushes your stories.
Now, speaking about bringing out those qualities in your characters, what have you done as a director to learn how to really bring that out in your actors?
Well, the first thing I did was I took acting classes. I've taken acting classes so that when I talk to my crew, I'm not a good actor, but when I talk to my cast members, I'd express to them like what I want fully, instead of because I've been on sets with other student directors and even some professionals who the direction that you give an actor might sound like, oh, just give me more. That doesn't mean anything. Giving me more doesn't explain that. And another thing I really like to do with them is I tell my actors, always start right at the top. If it's a lot easier to bring your acting down a level than it is to try to raise it. So
Very
if they
true.
start the scene and they're screaming and yelling, great. Now I just have to tell them, don't yell. Try to maybe enforce your voice. Make it, fill the room. You don't have to yell. Be stern. And those small little additions are what I find to be the most impactful in telling your cast members what they need to hear. Another really good thing is I've noticed, again, it's with students and I don't know about professionals, but character sheets are really important. If you write down on a sheet and it says, these are the main qualities of your character and what their personality is and how they might react to a given situation of stress or happiness, then they can build off of that and they go, well, I already have a spreadsheet of how this character should act. Now I will add my own personal flair into it. And that's what my actors have done for the most part.
And how open are you to collaboration with the actors? Because some directors are like, this is the way I want it. This is the way you're going to do it. Other directors, it becomes a much more team effort that is like, okay, this is what I imagine, but I'd like to see what you can bring into that. What would you like to add to that? How do you see this playing out?
Right. So I first and foremost will always say, well, we're going to do what's on the script first. We have to get a take of that. I need this version of it. But if they come up to me and they say, can we try it this way? Of course, we'll try it that way. Very lenient on that. Because if they have an idea and they've been working on this character for so long, then I'm going to listen to them. And I can even give an example. I was with, an actor, his name is Marco Brogan, and his character was small. He had a small role in it, but his purpose was playing this brother who was older and trying to get his brother to kind of see that his life isn't as messed up as he thinks it is. But essentially what he does is he starts this argument and he's kind of yelling and then he quiets down. In his version, he wanted to start really quiet and then yell. But when he's yelling, his voice, he forced it to kind of break and he would start getting a little upset. And that was even more interesting. And I liked that version. I didn't use it, but it was interesting. So you always, I think it's unfair to not allow your actors to advance the story.
It's interesting you're saying about the different actor, the different directors, because I always remember the story, pardon me, the story of Stanley Kubrick when he was doing The Shining. and he was basically beating down, like, you know, he was beating down his actors. Not so much Jack Nicholson, but
Kelly Duvall
Shelley
especially.
Duvall. He was beating her down. I mean, there was a scene where she was having to back up some stairs, and Jack Nicholson was walking towards her, trying to attack her. And Stanley Kubrick got the shot, but at 175 takes. And Shelley Duvall was basically in tears, going, "I don't know what you want." And he's like, "I want you to do this." And then you get someone like Quentin Tarantino that on the set of Pulp Fiction, when he was writing Kill Bill, he was sitting with Uma Thurman and he was saying, "Well, this is what I'd like to see." Yeah, and he was basically writing it with her as he was going along. And she's like, "Oh, but we should do something like this." And he's like, "Yes, awesome, great idea." And he would write that down and he'd be like, "But what happens if we did this?" And she would be like, "Yeah, but I don't know." And he'd be like, "Well, let's try it when we get on set." So you can see that you've got one director that's basically, "You are gonna do this." And then you got someone like Tarantino that sits there with his actors and goes, "You tell me how you would play it. I know how I would see her, but you tell me how you would do it." And every actor that's worked with Tarantino has said he is tough, but he is extremely fair, and he wants a lot of input. He doesn't want to just sit there and go, "This is the cookie cutter shape that I've designed. This is what we're staying with. If you know you break out of that cookie cutter, no, back you come. You're not going to get any, separate ideas." So I like that idea that you're actually allowing your actors to basically explore what they want to do, and you're using different takes, in your scenes, and you're doing the take that you want, but you're actually allowing them to sort of like branch out a little bit and show you what they've got to offer. And that's a great way of doing it. I mean, I am not a director by any stretch of the imagination, but I've just seen over the years reading different directors have how there are certain stars that sit there and go, "I would not want to work with him ever again." Brian De Palma, who did The Godfather. I think it was Brian De Palma that did The Godfather. I think
I
he did.
think so.
Yeah.
No, that was Scorsese,
Oh,
wasn't it?
sorry, Martin Scorsese. Sorry, that's right, Martin Scorsese. Very much cookie cutter. "I want this, but if we do that, I want this." Okay, and it got to the point where actors were just like, "Oh, he's doing another movie? No, thanks. I don't want to do that again because it's just so hard." And even James Cameron, when he was doing The Abyss, that's another director that really pushed his actors to the limit. Got a great movie. It's an absolutely stunning movie. But even the actors were saying, "If we were going to do The Abyss Part Two, yeah, not happening. I'm not going through that again." But he got what he wanted. So, and this is, it really shows just the depth of some directors, which is great to see,
Yeah, I mean you have this you have I personally feel like you have to have a middle ground. You shouldn't beat your actors into getting what you think is the best shot, but you also can't allow the actors to do whatever they want. Like there's got to be a middle ground. You've got to allow them wiggle room, because that's what their job is to pretend to be a different person and different characters and people think differently, and that's you should allow that. But with mediation.
Now, with the actors, how did you cast it? Was it people that you already knew and thought would be perfect for the role, or did you hold auditions, like open auditions?
A little bit of both. So this comes after I've worked with several actors on other projects as a crew member and in all sorts of locations. But for We So Much Few, the main cast, the younger characters, these were people I already knew for the most part. And I casted all three of them first. And then for other actors, like the adults that are in the story, that casting was done off of a site, Black, no, Backstage. And that was where you can reach out to a bunch of actors. They can be non-union, union. And then, they reached out and I pulled one person from there. That's
And
how I did it.
are you using any union actors in this?
No, we don't have any union actors. Actually, no. We do have one. He is in a smaller union. It's not SAG, but he's in something. I don't have it off the top of my head right now.
Now, since you mentioned SAG, at this point in time, at this recording, which is the 3rd of September, 2023, there is the actors' strike in Hollywood, where the writers have gone out on strike in sympathy with them.
Yeah,
you can decline to answer the question, but I'm just curious where you stand on that.
I am with the strike fully. Personally, you know, I'm not in any union yet. But I'm going to be, hopefully, at some point. The idea that studio executives and these people at the very top of this branch are not willing to give what I believe the number is about 1 to 2% of their earnings to writers and the actors.
To the people who actually make possible for them to have the multi-million dollar salaries.
It is ridiculous and it's upsetting, because what a lot of people don't understand is you have A-list actors and then you have the rest of the actors. And they're not making $1 million for every movie they're in. A lot of actors are getting paid pretty small amounts. I don't have the rate off any notes right now, but let's say I hired an actor who was in SAG. And luckily, if you're a student, it's different. You get to negotiate that price. But when I negotiated once with an actor, we had a 3-day shoot, and the rate we had to pay them was about $90, you know, per the day, for however many hours we're doing. And the day was short, and so that's why it was really $90. If you're doing a full day, you could be paying someone about, you know, $20 an hour for the day, however many days.
Yeah, the last time I heard SAG rates, and this is going back at least 15 years, it was like $300 a day for like an extra.
It's a lot. And I could understand why they wouldn't want to pay, you know, that number. But when you have so much money, that's not an issue.
Not just that, but these are people who only work sporadically. They're not working consistently.
If you look at the general line of people who are doing film, let's say you're a grip. I think the average currently in 2023 is, if you're doing maybe 2-3 projects, you'll probably only make $45,000 a year. That's if you're on a really good project in a really good area. And that's American dollars. But if, you know, you're higher up in the chain and you're an AC, well, maybe you make a bit more, but it's not enough that you're going to stop working. You know, you need the union rates and you need that extra bump. And, everyone isn't going to be making as much as like the top A-list actors. And
most people aren't going to ever see that kind of money.
But it's interesting what you just said, 45,000. I just did a quick quote. 45,000 American is only $69,637 Australian. So it's really not a huge amount of money.
Now, also, you mentioned a couple of terms there, an AC and a grip. For our listeners who are not in the industry, could you just give us a quick explanation of what those are?
Yeah, so a grip or a gaff, they're going to be working in kind of behind the scenes. They are part of the crews. A gaffer is going to be dealing with electrical issues or just general wiring. And then a grip will be exactly kind of what it sounds like. He's moving things around. He's setting up diffusion for lights. And they're going to be the people who are really setting up those really heavy equipment. And then an AC is just a camera assistant.
Okay. So I always thought I always had a vision that the grip was the guy who just basically held the cables for the camera and made sure nobody tripped over them.
Yeah. Well, most likely not.
I'm glad they actually brought that up, because I want to find out, and I probably have wanted to know this for such a long time. What the hell is a best boy?
Yes.
is this a guy that just walks around going, man, I'm the best. It's all good. I'm hired because I'm awesome. I mean, what is that? What is the best boy? I need to know.
The best boy is going to be the second person underneath the key technician. And they're going to be the part of the lighting team. So you'll have your key technician who will maybe be setting up like light blends, and then the best boy will be doing that work and getting those cameras into the right position.
Oh, thank you so much. Now,
so he's doing the lighting designer's grunt work, basically.
Now I can sleep tonight at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's not going to wake me up going, what is it? What is it? And for Film. Those.
And don't think he doesn't do it.
I do wake
up. In a lot of ways can be broken into. You have all these people, and then you have all the people who make the plans, and then all the people who do the plan.
Yeah,
that's kind of how it's always.
Yeah, and all the people who make the plans get the big bucks, and all the people who actually execute it and do all the hard work get the crap money.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now you have a fund page right now because we've got. I've got it up here. You've got some funding that we're reaching out for everyone. It's an Indiegogo campaign. Can you explain to us a little bit about that? Apparently, you've got. Well, as far as I can see, you've got like 16 days left. So can you tell me all about it?
Yes. So the fundraising part of it, this just goes to allowing us to make this project as good as it can be. And that is about securing payment for actors. And it's, so we can pay for reimbursements that come up. It also allows us to feed our crew on those days and then allows us to submit our project to film festivals when they're done.
So if you want to feed starving college students, this is a good project to invest in.
Absolutely. Now, I'm just looking at it.
Let them eat more than ramen.
Yes. No ramen noodles. Now, I'm just looking at what you've got here on offer. So you've got the special thanks in credits. You can actually get something like that. You can do that. You can also get a signed script by the cast and crew. You can also get a DVD with bloopers. That would be an interesting one.
Oh, I want that. We're getting that.
That'd be an interesting one to get. But you can also make a contribution of any amount that you feel is necessary to help these guys out. So what's the so how do they actually reach out in the Indiegogo campaign?
The Indiegogo, it's you log in with your account and you can go on there and you can put in any amount that you want to put in. I should mention that if you donate and you wanted one of the perks, and you're out of the United States. Fortunately, we can't ship from there as we're using a third party for these things.
Aww.
And they only send out in the U.S., unfortunately.
The good thing I have friends in the U.S., I can have it shipped to them and they can send it to me.
It was the main compromise we made for that. But we didn't know that people would be donating from out of season.
But people can donate from all over the world. I mean, because this podcast... Yeah.
So if they want to up their brownie points in heaven, donate from wherever you are to this campaign.
Yeah. Now, obviously, making the accounts free, it's a free account they make. And obviously, because this podcast goes all over the world, and I'm saying all over the world that this podcast goes to.
You can't get much farther away than we are right now.
Yeah. We're actually all over the world. So they can donate any amount that they feel is necessary that they'd like to contribute to your campaign and actually really kick you over the line that you're actually looking for.
We appreciate it.
No, we really appreciate you taking the time out of a busy schedule to come and talk to us.
Now, before you wrap it up, Paul, I did want to go
back. I wasn't
back.
Wrapping up. I was just talking.
Hush. Okay, so Alexander, at the beginning of the interview, Paul asked about directorial influences, and you mentioned Christopher Nolan. For those who are not sure who Chris Nolan is, what are some of the things that he has done? Where would we know him from? Is he the one that directed Oppenheimer?
Yes, he did.
But that I feel like I know him from other stuff too, and I can't think of what it is.
He made the Batman trilogy with
Christian Bale.
Yes, thank you. He made Tenet. He made he's made a bunch more that I'm forgetting.
Okay,
now.
But in other words, he is kind of a big deal and a very successful director. Yeah, I can understand having seen some of those, and I can't wait until Oppenheimer comes to the home class. He's done some amazing work and so I can understand why you like him.
Well, he just looking on, I just went to Wikipedia just quickly. He is a very successful director because the budget for Oppenheimer was $100 million.
Wow.
And he's currently got it at $790.4 million at the box office.
Wow.
Yeah, he's very successful.
Yeah.
And he's got an amazing array of actors under him.
Yeah, and an amazing array of film under him, and different types of film as well, which is, you know, he's a well-rounded director.
Yeah, but as I said, if you ever want to giggle, go on to YouTube and look for Birdemic, and just to see what you
don't. It hurts. It hurts.
It's just to see what you should never do as a director.
Okay. I'll compromise with you. Go, and because we don't want to promote Birdemic here, because we're promoting actual good work, honey.
Yes, we are, and I.
But watch the trailer for Birdemic, and that will be enough.
You've
especially
seen the movie.
When you see the CGI of the bird attacks.
Do we want to tell him how much he got? James Wan got for the campaign that he was trying to run for.
Oh yes. Okay, so James Noyan ran an Indiegogo campaign to raise money for Birdemic 3, the final in his trilogy.
Yeah.
And what was
the amount that he was looking for was $77,500. Just
so
to
not
finish,
a huge amount.
Not a huge amount, just to finish it off.
And right? How much did he get?
$693.
No, I thought he got 900 and something.
No, $693.
Oh, jeez. He didn't even crack
a grand. He couldn't even crack a grand for people to help him out. That's how bad this guy's directing is. I mean, yeah. Part one was terrible. Part two was abysmal. Part three was, we don't even want to discuss it.
Okay, so part one was, it quite possibly has overtaken Plan 9 from Outer Space as the worst film ever made. But there was something about it that just kind of created a campy cult classic, and unfortunately encouraged James Noyan to make part two. And that one was actually worse than the first one, but it still had kind of a campy quality to it. So people accepted it. So he's like, yes, I'm the best director ever, and I'm going to go on and make part three. And everybody is done with part three. It's like, no, this should not happen.
And the funny thing about this is the fact that he's never gone to film school. He's never studied film. He doesn't know how to direct.
He knows nothing.
He just decided one day out of the clear blue sky that at his home, he's got a computer and a laptop. I think I'll make a movie. Yeah. And that's how it started.
Okay, so let's stop talking about Birdemic and
we
get
can
back
wrap up.
To yes. We Selfish Few.
We Selfish Few
is going to be amazing.
Yes, it will
I cannot
be.
Wait to see it.
No, I'm looking forward to it.
Yep, absolutely looking forward to. Okay, is this where we confess that he's our son?
No, we could adopt him because he's going to be that successful.
Yeah, well, I think they might notice the fact that you two have the same that we all have the same last name.
Probably.
There I am trying to keep this professional when you.
Well, we can put in a gap and you can edit it out, honey.
No, it's okay.
But seriously, yes, Alexander, yes. Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today and talk about your film and about your experience. When do you expect We Selfish Few to actually launch?
The production days so far will be starting in October. That's when the shooting plans start. And then we have essentially, I will have to say it will be a while until it's done.
So maybe sometime next year, like mid next year?
Yeah, definitely next year. I would say no later than April.
Now, when are the deadlines to apply for the film festivals?
All depends on which one it is. Yeah. My hope is to submit it to the Boston Film Festival, because that's the area we're in.
Yep.
It's the biggest one around here. That there's a lot of films that go there every year. And I would pray that I get into it, you know, that our project makes it all the way in. But if it didn't, I wouldn't be too surprised. A lot of really good projects go into that. But there's a whole bunch. There is like a season of film festivals that you can find, but they're all generally around the same time.
Now, are you looking to go into like Sundance and stuff like that too?
Sundance is not for short films.
Oh, really?
Sundance is primarily for established filmmakers.
Yeah.
That Sundance is for that place where you'll have maybe independent filmmakers. Maybe you'll have people who have enough money to film their project, but not to distribute it. That's what it's used for. Because production in itself is so much. What happens a lot is instead of films starting with studios, they might only find a studio at the very end of their production. So trying to think of an example, what I The Whale. I think The Whale was a perfect example of that, with Brendan Fraser. That film was finished and then shown at Sundance, found funding, and then a production company or distribution company, they allowed or sent the money to send that movie out to theaters or streaming. But yeah, to bring the point back around, Sundance is primarily for feature length films.
Okay. Now, speaking of which, do you know where you're going to be shooting? Like what locations?
A lot of it is just kind of in the general area of Fitchburg, kind of where the school is itself. But there's no locations that are like groundbreaking or anything. A couple places that we had to pay for, a couple places that were not.
Because I know you were looking at my alma mater. I'm just curious, are you going to be using any space there?
That was for a different project.
Mm.
That was
Okay.
for another project and another group.
Because it would just be fun to see places that I that's one of my favorite things when I'm watching movies and they take place in places that I know. And I'm like, hey, I know that place.
Yeah.
That's just always fun. Hey, I've been there.
Well,
It's just a picture of you.
that was like a movie that we that I've got that was made by Rob Zombie, and Sherry Moon Zombie walks through the little area where they've got the Bewitched statue.
Oh yeah, in Salem.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there going, I stood on
Yeah,
that.
and then there's been a couple of Mel Gibson ones that came to Northampton, and it's like, hey, that's the city hall.
It's always good to point out those sort of
It's
things.
always fun to see that kind of thing. Or when they shoot in London, and it's like, hey, I've walked down that street. I had lunch at that cafe.
So going back to the fundraising, so now anyone that wants to contribute, all they need to do is make a free account on Indiegogo and search for the Selfish Few, and there you can then donate however much you'd
Well,
like
actually,
to.
I think well, the link that we have is
We
going to
are gonna,
go straight to it.
yeah, we are gonna put a link at the bottom of all our podcasts. So you just click on the link and it'll take you directly there. But anyone that doesn't have access to that sort of situation, you just go to Indiegogo campaign and make a free account. It doesn't cost you anything. You can then type in We Selfish Few. It'll take you to their page, and then you can donate for however much you'd like to do to really support these, these really talented artists, because they're making an amazing leap into a very, very big world. And it's a great idea to actually get behind these guys and girls and really help out and contribute.
I'd also like to point out that it's a truly beautiful thing to see young people working so hard in their passion, because the news is filled so much these days with young people who are just lazy and causing trouble and feel like so entitled that I just think it's refreshing and beautiful and so worth supporting young people who want to work hard and do something that is so worthwhile.
And eventually get to a point where they'll say, oh, a job? No, I don't work. I work in my passion, and my passion is that I've never gone to work a day in my life.
Yep,
So
and someday Alexander's going to reach out to us and say, "You gave me my first push on the podcast to help get our funding over the line. We have a red carpet coming up. Come and join us.
yes,
Walk red carpet with me."
it'll be even more exciting when he reaches out and says, listen, I've been nominated for an Academy Award. I've got two seats next to me. The cast are on the other side of me, but this side, there's two available. Would you like to
There's
come to the
two
Academy
seats.
Awards?
And then when he wins, we're going to make the news reels because we'll completely embarrass ourselves chat cheering for him.
Yep, we will.
And my mascara is going to run because I'll be crying so hard.
I won't wear mascara that night. Just saying. But we're
I
really
wish this that this were a video podcast at the moment so you guys could see Alexandra laughing at us.
Alexander sitting there going, oh my God. This is my first movie and they're already talking Academy Awards, but I can see that this movie is going to be a great success. So it is just only up and up from here. So we really want to thank you very much for taking your time out of your busy schedule to come and talk to us today on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
And I'm just so excited about the film itself, because the story is so important. And it's absolutely true that especially when someone is getting close to passing away,
I'll take that one, because I have had a situation in my family where, you know, my mum was suffering from cancer. She was getting close to the end, and we became very selfish. We wanted more time. We wanted something else. It was not fair. And we started to become like we instead of what she was dealing with, and everyone was dealing, you know, with the cancer in their own way. And I think this story that you were telling is very, very important to get out to the community, that they can actually sit there and understand how they feel if they're going through something, or if a family member is going through something, that they, what they want, you know, it's just such a very powerful story to be told.
And thank you for not saying what I was trying to say.
Okay.
What I was trying to say is that when someone is dying, you are very focused on them and what they're going through. And a lot of people do not acknowledge and deal with their own feelings. So it does tend to come out sideways.
Yeah.
But the fact is, it's very important to do self-care during this time.
Yeah.
Which I learned a couple months ago when my mom died. Thank you very much, which is why the tears.
I understand that. I know your mom passed away.
I know you know, but everybody who's listening might not understand why I'm breaking apart.
I know.
So I'm just saying.
It's all right.
But I'm glad that you're telling this story and this perspective. I think it's a really unique place to come from. And I think it's going to make for an excellent film. So for the fifth time, we'll try to wrap up here and say thank you again for joining us and taking the time and doing what you're doing. So thank you.
I do appreciate it.
So that's Alexander Milner, writer, director, and all around good egg of We Selfish Few. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for joining us for this special episode. And especially big thank yous if you do reach out. Not that we don't love you anyway, but if you do reach out and support this Indiegogo campaign, we are truly grateful.
And once again, if you want to reach out to do that, it's Indiegogo. It's a free sign up, and then basically go to We Selfish Few, type that in there, and you can donate to however much money you want to donate to. Just, it's not a donation. It's supporting the arts. It's supporting a great organization of young actors and artists that are really, really wanting to put their mark on the world. So if you do want to support them, that's how you go about it. But the links will be at the bottom of the show notes in all the podcasts. So you can just click on that and it'll take it directly to you to that page.
Yep. So thank you, Alexandra, for joining us. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
All right. See you later.
Bye.